Welcome to A Higher Branch, a source of practical and powerful information for busy people dedicated to boosting their personal health and professional performance. I'm your host, Sam McCall. So hello, welcome to our podcast again, Casey.
Thanks for having me, Sam. It's great to be back.
So our last podcast together certainly attracted a lot of attention. We promoted it heavily to our audience because we thought it was a very important topic. The topic was raising girls who like themselves. And we certainly had a lot of people who were supporting your message, but we had a few people who were quite also heated in their debate about a couple of topics. So today we're going to go through how to handle criticism, but I thought I would just do a recap of the sort of feedback we got and to get your clarification on a couple of things. I thought you clarified it well in the podcast, but let's go through a couple of things. One where we got a lot of debate was parents saying, no, I'm not going to let my teenage daughter make her choices. We have certain family values. She's got to respect our traditions and she's not going to go out wearing clothes that is going to destroy her reputation or impact her reputation. So that was one comment. The other one was, no, she will damn well kiss grandma because she needs to understand that grandma was a little girl wearing a dress, barefoot, running around, playing just like she was. So yeah, we polarized some people when it came to those two particular examples, obviously. So I thought I would just give you the opportunity for you to clarify a couple of those points.
Yeah, look, the first thing I want to say is that parenting is controversial. And so it's really good that I've worked out how to deal with criticism because you get a lot of it. But the thing is, we are all really in agreement that we have a big problem with girls, that girls are growing up in crisis. If we keep doing what we've been doing, we're not going to get a different outcome. And some of the things that we have identified is that girls do not feel in control of their bodies, and that has serious repercussions throughout their whole life. So what I am asking of parents is to be brave, because it does take bravery to have a look at the way that you have always been raised, the scripts and traditions in your own family, and start to unpick whether or not they are actually working for girls in today's society. So I'll just take both of those issues separately. The first one about what girls wear. What we're talking about here, the objection to girls wearing what they want, at the core of it is slut shaming. Is that if a girl wears a certain thing, she's asking for it, and therefore it is her fault if something happens to her. Now, as a society, we really need to move on from girls asking for it. Our focus is on the wrong person here. A girl should be free to wear whatever she likes and be safe and be able to conduct herself freely in society, as freely as boys and men.
100%.
And so every time we say a girl can't wear this, we're effectively saying she's responsible for the way boys and men treat her. And that is just a conversation that needs to change. The second thing I'll say about the judgments people make over what people wear. A girl can wear a dress in a room of 100 people, and there will be 100 different opinions and judgments about her based on her appearance. So she cannot control her appearance to please everyone. And this whole idea that a girl has to wear a certain thing, be a certain way to please everyone, sets a girl up for failure because it is impossible to meet the expectations of everyone. If we want to raise a girl who likes herself, she needs to meet the expectations of herself because she cannot control the world outside around her. And for anyone who says that I don't want my daughter to leave the house wearing short shorts or a crop top, I would say to them that it is far worse for her to grow up believing that she does not control her body. The consequences of that are far more severe than you not liking the outfit that she wears on a particular day.
Absolutely. 100% agree with you.
And the other thing to think about is we're also talking about fashion. I grew up in the 70s where we had tiny terry-toweling little shorts. So it's not today's society of girls. It's like the fashion goes round and round. Why was it okay for me to wear those shorts in the 70s that my parents put me in, but it's now not okay for a girl to choose to wear it in denim? It's crazy. And all of this is, again, we're just policing girls and women and judging them in the way that we shouldn't. That is what I'd say about clothing. When it comes to kissing grandma, the research is very clear that teenage girls do not feel that they can say no in certain situations. So when girls are asked to send, for example, nude selfies, the research shows that only 8% of those girls actually want to send them. 92% of them feel like they have to, that they can't upset the boy, that they have no choice. We also see this when it comes to oral sex. Girls don't want to do it, but they feel like they can't say no. Now, their whole lives, since their earliest memories, by being forced to kiss grandma, they are being taught that what grandma thinks, what someone else thinks and feels, is more important than what they want to do with their bodies. So people get very upset at me drawing that comparison because they think I'm implying that grandma is a predator. I'm absolutely not. At the core of this is teaching a girl that she gets to decide what she does with her body and whether or not she gives affection. And if she can't practice that in a home, in a safe environment, when is she supposed to learn it?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for clarifying those two or elaborating on what you meant. And it's a non-apologetic approach. And I really appreciate that. As I said, as a father of a teenage daughter, I want her to feel like she's free, that she's in control, and that she can wear things that make her feel good without judgment. So it's a beautiful message. It is a different message. It is an outlier message because over the last few years, we've been told just to reinforce a positive body image, telling girls how beautiful they are.
Can I just say one more thing about kissing grandma?
Yes.
Why would grandma want a kiss if the child doesn't want to give it? So we encourage our girls to be affectionate, and they are when they choose to be. They give authentic, intentional affection to the special adults in their lives. And when they give their aunt or grandma a cuddle, it's because they really want to. So this whole idea that it's even a bit creepy to me that someone's going to kiss you when they don't want to, I think it's better for everyone if everyone in that kiss or that affectionate moment is there because they want to be.
Couldn't agree more. Thank you so much, Casey. So let's move on to the topic of how to handle criticism. This is such an important topic that cuts across all relationships, whether it's in couples, whether it's family members, whether it's friends, whether it's work colleagues, your manager at work. So it's a very important skill to master because most people can get defensive. So I guess we've got to look at it from both perspectives. The person giving the criticism, what is the best way to do that? We've heard of the term constructive criticism, but what does that look like? And also the person receiving the criticism, how should they frame it? So I'd really love your input on this.
Okay, so I learned how to deal with criticism the hard way because I had to develop a strategy. So I'll just tell you a little bit of the backstory. My first book came out in 2009, and it was before we really understood trolling and the barrage of criticism that people get online, particularly women. And so when my first book came out, I was quite naive. I had written the book with the very best of intentions, and I assumed that it would be received like that. And on the very first day that it came out, I received an email from a reader, you know, like a real reader, not my mom who bought my book to support me. And this person had read the book in a day and had emailed me. And I remember I was so excited to read this email. And then I opened it. And I will remember this email until the day I die. It said, "The best thing I can say about your book is that it is expensive toilet paper." Now, that was March 2009. Every single week since then, I have received criticism from someone about my writing. So they email me, message me on social media, leave comments at the bottom of my articles that I write, reviews in Goodreads or Amazon or whatever. And sometimes, in fact, most of the time, the criticism is really cruel. People will say that I'm stupid, I'm ridiculous, I'm fat, I'm ugly. Not sure if we can swear, you can edit this out, but I'm unfuckable, and that they can't believe that anyone would want to marry me. They feel sorry for my kids, and it just goes on and on. And in the beginning, I assumed that I was causing this because I felt like I must have done something so terrible to provoke such a response. And I remember I would receive this criticism and I'd get into bed and I'd cry and I would lie there and wonder what was so wrong with me. What was it about me that was so wrong that would make people do this? And I thought that if I could just fix myself, if I could just make myself a better writer or a better person or a better mother or a better wife or a different face or, you know, all the things that people said, then the criticism would stop. But then one day when I was lying in bed and I was feeling totally miserable, I started reading the work of Brené Brown, amazing social scientist from America. And she was talking about criticism and she writes about vulnerability. And it was such a light bulb moment for me, because what I realized through reading her work is that everyone who does anything out of the ordinary, who shows up, who has a say, who is truly themselves, gets criticized. There's no way around it. And the way she says it, which really resonated with me, is that criticism is the entry price that you pay to live the life that you want. And for me, that made me realize that I actually have a choice in this, because I was feeling really powerless, that I was just putting something out there and then everyone was criticizing me and I couldn't control this. And the choice that I realized that I had was, what sort of life do I want to live? And this is a choice that we all have to make, and we all have to make it every day. Because if we want to live a big, bold life where we show up and do our thing and have a say, then we're going to be criticized by someone. There's no way around it. It doesn't matter who you are, how you contort yourself. The criticism is coming. So you either accept that or you make yourself small and fearful and try to avoid it. And for me, that wasn't an option. I didn't want to live like that. So I realized that rather than put effort into trying to avoid criticism or even try to understand it, I had to develop strategies to deal with it. And so the strategy that I developed was, again, inspired by Brené Brown. For me to listen to someone, for me to accept their criticism, they have to meet three criteria. And the first one is, do they also show up? So is this person criticizing me also putting themselves out there? Do they know what it's like to do what I do? Because it's so easy to sit on the sidelines of life or behind a keyboard and sling mud. Okay, so if the other person is not also taking a risk, then they haven't earned the right for me to listen to them. The second one is, do they have my best interests at heart? So there's four reasons why someone will criticize you, and only one of them is valid. So they want to hurt you, they want to make fun of you, they want to silence you. And I think that a big reason for the criticism that I received. And the fourth one is, do they genuinely want to help you? So the motivation behind the criticism is really important. So as you said before, it is important to learn how to receive criticism, because constructive criticism and feedback makes us better people. Yeah. But you have to understand the motivation behind the person giving it. And if they genuinely have your best interests at heart, then it's worth listening to. Otherwise, it's not. And then the third one is, do you respect them? People have opinions and give criticism on all sorts of topics they know nothing about. So do I trust this person? Do I believe them? And this one is a really simple concept, just going back to raising girls, that we have done with our girls all through their lives. And it's very powerful when my daughter will come to me and say, Sally said I was a baby because I took adult kinder. And we would say, if Sally said you were a giraffe, would that make you a giraffe? And, you know, no, you know, a two-year-old can understand that. And then you say, well, just because Sally said you're a baby, does that make you a baby? And they go, no. And so that's a very easy way to reinforce the idea that you have to question whether or not it's true. And so I apply that three criteria to anyone who's criticizing me. And with practice, I have learned to choose whether or not I will listen to a person's criticism and whether or not I'll let it affect me. So when I say that, people go, yeah, but when I'm criticized, I can't choose. I'm so hurt. I can't think straight and I can't think my way out of it. And I used to think like that too. I used to think that feelings and emotions just happen. That just hit you and next thing you're crying in bed. But what I realized through the research of raising girls who like themselves is that there's a triggering event. Then there is a thought about that event. And the thought about the event triggers the feeling, okay? So if you can learn to have better thoughts, you can learn to have better feelings. And so I'll give you an example of just one that happened this year of how I used that understanding of the thought to help me deal with criticism. So the first day that Raising Girls Who Like Themselves came out, a shock jock in Sydney went on air. He hadn't read the book and basically said that I was an idiot, the book was ridiculous, and no one should buy it. Now, when I was listening to that, I could feel like the hurt descending on me. And I thought, hang on a minute. Does this person also show up? Sure, he's got a radio show, but he hasn't spent 10 years pouring his heart and soul into a book. Does he have my best interests at heart? Absolutely not. He was just wanting to tear me apart for ratings. And do I respect him? No, like this person is probably literally the last person I would ever go to for parenting advice. So in that moment, I said, no, he has not earned the right for me to listen to him, that I will not let him stop me from doing what I want to do and living the life that I want to live. So just by catching myself in that moment, instead of being crushed by the criticism that I would have been years ago, I actually felt really empowered because I kept my power. I didn't give my power away to someone who didn't deserve it.
And I love that three-step approach. It's a conscious approach to dealing with criticism rather than a reactionary approach from the emotions. So it engages the mind first, you think, you rationalize it, and then the feelings follow. So I really love that. And I'll share a story with you just for everyone that's listening, because we all cop criticism. And I remember as a law clerk many years ago, I resigned from my job. And when I resigned, the partner of the law firm was upset. And she said to me, you'll never make a good lawyer and you'll never amount to anything. And that were her parting words. And she told me to pack my things and leave. And I use that as fuel. So for people who are listening, you can also use criticism as fuel to prove people wrong. So I walked out of there thinking, I'll show you. And I remember many years later, I saw her at a professional development conference because you have to get your points up as a lawyer every year by attending certain lectures. And I was actually speaking at this conference and I was introduced as one of the experts in banking and finance law. And I remember looking at her in the corner of my eye and I had the best satisfaction. I feel so proud. So it's for people that are listening, you can also use it as fuel.
For sure. Yeah. My very first book, when I tried to get it published, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, agent in Australia took time out of her day to write me a personalized letter. Wonder if she's listening now. And she said that she had no confidence in my ability to write. Not that she didn't even like that book. She didn't think that I could write at all. Now, I'm an international bestseller now. I've been read by 10 million people, written 8 books. I'm talking to you now. I would not be here today talking to you right now if I had listened to her criticism.
And the world would miss out on your thought leadership. And that's why it's important for people that are listening to know how to handle criticism, because we don't want them to live a small life. Yep. You need to live the big life that you deserve. And everyone has a purpose and you found your purpose. When I read your blogs, I just loved your writings. I could tell that there was passion and there was intensity behind the message and there was experience and there was a lot of thought. Now, I did agree with everything you wrote. That's why I reached out to record this podcast, because I was having all these aha moments. But even if I didn't agree with you, I would still respect your abilities. And I don't think we need to go there. A lot of people, when they get criticized, start thinking, what drives that person to be nasty? And you shouldn't go there, because it's not you, it's them. It's whatever the place they may be in their life at this point in time, that maybe they've had a bad day, a bad week, a bad month, a bad year, who knows? Many years ago, I remember a paralegal in my office hung up the phone and ran out of the office crying. And HR manager called me and she said, I won't mention her name, but she said she ran out of the office crying. What should I do? I said, go get her. And then she came back into my office. I said, what happened? And she said, this person on the phone called me an idiot. He said that I was a monkey, like I was as dumb as a monkey. And all these hurtful things. She's doing her job. He wasn't getting what he wanted because we have certain legal requirements. You need to tick a few boxes, get a few documents. He was very nasty. I said to her, look, okay, grab the file, sit in front of me. I'm going to call the customer. And I called and spoke to him and I said, look, I understand your frustration. Then he started calling me stupid things as well. Like, are you really a lawyer? You don't sound like you know what you're talking about, all that sort of stuff. And I just listened. By the end of it, I said, look, do you want me to get the result for you or not? He wanted his file settled on a Friday. It was on a Tuesday. And he said, yes, I do. So I said, all right, let me do that. And then I promise you on Friday after settlement, I will call you. And then you can tell me everything that we did wrong and you can criticize me. I was that condescending. I said, you can call me and criticize me. I wanted to get us a solution. So long story short, we settled his file. We went above and beyond. And I called him up and I said, as promised, just letting you know, your file settled, everything went according to your instructions. And I said, look, I'm happy to take whatever criticism. That's the only way we can grow as a company and identify issues and train our staff. So anyway, there was a long silence. And he said, please tell the person, I didn't mean all those things. I said, okay, I will. Yeah, thank you. And there was another long silence. And then he said, my wife died last year of cancer. And I said, I'm really sorry to hear that. And then he said, and my son committed suicide 6 months after that. And then there was another long silence. And I'm sitting there thinking, this poor guy. And then after that, I remember hanging up the phone. I had a staff meeting. I get everyone into the boardroom and I shared this story. And I said, it's not always about you. Don't take things personally. You don't know what's going on in other people's lives. And people who get hurt, hurt others. And that's just the way it is. So don't take it personally. I love your system for consciously dealing with criticism, and it's a very professional approach, but I thought I'd just share my take on that. The other technique I use is called think like a billionaire. So I say, if you're a billionaire and you're sitting there and I just said that you were stupid and useless and won't amount to anything, would you care? I said, no. I said, does Richard Branson care or Elon Musk? No, they don't. So when you think like a billionaire, that's water off a duck's back. Now, I don't know if these techniques are grounded in psychological theory or in any way conform with your approach, but I thought I'd share those two tips anyway.
Yeah, they all fit together. I think the other thing that is important to realize is that criticism doesn't kill you. Like, I have received so much criticism, I could wallpaper my entire house with it and I'm still standing. And I think that it is the fear of being criticized that holds people back from fulfilling their potential and following their dreams. And as someone who has lived through a barrage of it, it doesn't kill you. You're going to be okay. And so you need to want to follow your dreams more than your fear of being criticized. Yeah. The other thing that I would say is that dealing with criticism is a skill. And just like any other skill, you get better at it with practice. So what we've talked about, I have a workshop and I run it through with school kids and they just soak it all up, because when you're 10 and you learn this technique, they don't have a lifetime of pattern thinking to change. And it really can transform the way they interact with the world and with us too. You know, I can honestly say I would not have had the career that I've had without perfecting the skill of handling criticism. And it took practice and now it just doesn't hurt me anymore.
Beautiful. So I hope everyone that's listening remembers those three steps that you mentioned earlier. Are there any other techniques that we can learn for criticism? You mentioned criticism from strangers. I think that's easier to deal with for a lot of people, even though it is hurtful and we need to be armed with the techniques that you spoke of. But what about handling criticism from family members? Is it different?
Look, it's far more complicated because very often you do value their opinions. But I mean, for me, like I'll give you an example with my mom. So she will give me criticism. And in most cases, she does show up in some respect and she does have my best interests at heart, but she doesn't always know what she's talking about in a particular area of my life. In that respect, I have to remind myself that mum, in this case, is not meeting all three of my criteria. Even though it's well-meaning, she doesn't have an understanding of this particular situation in my life or my perspective. So I can choose to put that in context of her life experience and her generation and do what I want to do anyway. Yeah. The other thing that comes along with criticism in families, which was a skill that I learned far too late in life, was actually how to handle conflict. Because I never learned that as a child. I would hide from it. I wouldn't say what I thought. And then it would all brew up inside me and I'd bitch behind someone's back or I'd explode or whatever. But the technique that I learned through my own children is a very simple script to deal with conflict, which dovetails into criticism. And it's just this: when you say that, I feel like this because that very simple script. So I'll say to my mum, when you say this, I feel like this because, and then we can actually resolve it.
Really good technique. It's basically getting the other person to step into your shoes and have empathy for how you feel. And from experience, I find handling criticism from family the worst to deal with. It's very difficult, especially from your parents. The parents tend to have an emotional hold over you. So when parents criticize you, it can be very difficult. I think being honest to say, every time you say this, you make me feel like that, instead of being defensive or instead of going on the attack.
Not saying anything for decades, letting it Fester.
That's right. What about criticism in the workplace? Is that different as well? People in the workplace these days, thank goodness, is that management and HR are learning the skills of positive psychology. So they give criticism in private, highly constructive. But I have heard of workplaces that are toxic. The criticism is out in the open and makes people feel really ashamed and stupid. How do you handle that?
Yeah, so in that case, I will go back to lessons for children, because I think when we break it down for kids, it's very simple and we can also apply it to adults. So when I talk to kids about conflict and criticism, there's two kinds. And this came from Dana Kerford, who is a friendship skills expert. She calls it a friendship fire. So this is someone who cares about you, you're on the same page, but they've done something that has hurt your feelings and they might not realize it. Their criticism might have hurt you, but they're coming from a good place. That is the time when you use the conflict script. When you said this, I felt like this because. So there's that. On the other side, there's mean on purpose behavior. Now that happens in the playground and it happens in the boardroom. We call it bullying, but I like the term mean on purpose because it's very clear. So if someone is shredding you in the workplace and deliberately trying to hurt you, that is not a time for a soft conversation. That is a time for a quick comeback. And a quick comeback is a polite but firm one statement that lets the other person know that's not okay and you're not putting up with it. So it is really important to stand up for yourself in an assertive, polite way. Something like, that's not cool, that wasn't appropriate, one statement, and that's the end of the conversation. Now, what happens in the playground is that when a kid receives a quick comeback like that, they are less likely to do it again, because they didn't get the response that they want. And I think standing up to bullies in the workplace is the same. If you make it very clear that you're not tolerating that bad behavior, but you're not going to inflame it either, then it's less likely to happen again.
What if the criticism is valid, but the way it was delivered was demeaning? Does that change the approach?
Probably put that into the first category. That's a conversation when everyone's calmer. Because if it's valid and they have your best interests at heart, really, they're actually helping you. There is something to be gained for both parties in that situation, right?
Okay, yep. And lastly then, what about in a relationship? Couples.
Okay, the criticism script that I went through, the second part of that is if you don't get the response that you want. So when you say to your partner, when you don't come home, when you say that you're going to, I feel really upset because I've got to put the kids to bed or something like that. And your partner's had a really bad day. And instead of going, yeah, I can see that, they blow up. Then you say to them, and this is what we tell to kids as well, I can see now's not a good time to talk about this. When you're ready, let me know. And so you open the door. So what you're doing is you're investing back into that relationship, saying, I care enough about you and our relationship to want to solve this problem. I can see now's not a good time. So I am giving you a little bit of my power so you can come back to me when you're ready.
Love it. So a common complaint with couples is that the other person's always running late. Now, predominantly, it's the wife or the woman in the relationship, because it takes longer for women to get ready. But I know lots of male friends as well, where their partners complain about them as well, always running late. And a lot of people that are listening probably relate to this. An example of poor criticism is that you're always running late. You always do this and you always ruin the night for us. The better way to handle it is to say, when you are running late, it puts a lot of stress on me. It makes me feel stressed. And then when I arrive at the destination, I don't have a good time because I've arrived in a stressed state. I don't know why I get stressed, but I have this thing where I like to turn up on time. I'm saying this with a smile because this is a conversation that's very common in our household. And the moment I expressed myself from the letter where I said, I don't like to arrive late and it stresses me out, I just want you to know that. And then if we're going for dinner, then I'm going to get indigestion. And then I received a totally different response from my partner, Katrina. She makes sure that she allows an extra half an hour because she doesn't want me to get stressed. Now, after 20 years of marriage...
Conversation a bit earlier, shouldn't you?
I was doing the wrong thing for 19 years. And it was a tip I received from Dr. Guy Winch, who was a speaker at Upgrade Your Life last year. He's a therapist. Not sure if you're aware of his work.
No, I'm not.
In his book called How to Practice Emotional Hygiene, he talks about how to complain. Now, it's a little bit different to what we're talking about, criticism, but it's two sides of the same coin, isn't it? So what are the tips you can give people who want to give feedback, let's call it feedback, but to do it in a positive, constructive way? So we're looking at it from the perspective of the other person now. So if people, as I mentioned earlier, are in a bad place themselves, then they're going to project out what they're feeling in their own life. Yeah. So it might come across as angry or hurtful. But if for those people who are typically introverts, who listen a lot and analyze and want to provide constructive criticism or feedback, and they're the ones that will typically do it in writing, the keyboard warriors, what's the best way for them to do it, if not at all?
Yeah. Okay. I think, first of all, the first rule to keep everyone accountable is if you're not prepared to say it to someone's face, you don't type it through your fingers as well. So that is just the first hurdle to clear to make sure that everyone is behaving appropriately, because, you know, we lose our filter, don't we, sometimes when we're behind a keyboard. The second one is timing. So that conversation that you had with your wife, if you had that in the car on the way to the dinner party, it probably wouldn't have gone so well. You need to pick a time where everyone is calm. It's not an emotionally explosive moment. So timing is really important. The other thing is that, and it's the same when we deal with children, you criticize the behavior, not the person, and you be very specific about your criticism. So it's not you always do this and it's always like that. It's very specific to the one set of behavior that you're criticizing. The other thing with criticism is that it has to be something that the other person can control. Criticize someone for something that they don't feel that they're in control of, all you do is create disempowerment and shame, and that brings the worst out in them. So you're never going to get a response that you want when they're in a position of shame.
Absolutely. So if you have a complaint, complain to the person that can actually do something about it. And if that person can't do anything about it, then you shouldn't complain to them. Three beautiful tips on constructive criticism. Thank you so much for all those tips. It's a short and sweet topic, but I hope a lot of our listeners got something out of it. Is there anything else that you want to share with us?
I have in my wallet a card, a business size card. Yes. And on that card is the name of 6 people in my life who meet my criteria. So of who I will listen to. And I don't rely on that card now, but I used to in the beginning when I was learning this skill and I would receive criticism, I would pull out that card and look at it to remind myself of the people in my life who had earned the right for me to listen to. And if the person criticizing me was not on my card and didn't deserve to be there, I would go and talk to someone who was on my card and I would go and listen to their opinion and hear what they thought about my behavior or my work or whatever. And for me, that's a really nice emotional buffer. You know, I've got my 6 people in my wallet that I can remind myself that those are the people that I trust and choose to listen to them rather than the other people who have not earned the right for me to listen to.
I love that. Why 6 people?
Oh, that's just what? How many it turned out to be.
Okay. So for anyone that's listening, it's a really good tip, actually, something to write in your phone on the notes section. Pick the people that matter most in your life.
Yeah. The people whose opinion you really do trust and who have your best interests at heart. Because life's too short to be tying ourselves into knots, trying to win the approval of people who are deliberately or just carelessly hurting us.
Yes. Beautiful. Thank you so much, Casey. Now, I want to take this opportunity as well to formally invite you to come to Sydney. I know you're based in Melbourne in January next year for our Upgrade Your Life event. Hopefully, it looks like 99% it's going ahead.
Oh, so fantastic.
We'd like to invite you to come to that as a speaker in the Tria family area. And we'll talk to you offline about that. But I just wanted our listeners to know that you could be at Upgrade Your Life and it would be really interesting. I like controversy and I like conversations that spark conflict, and it's an opportunity for growth from that. Without competing opinions, you don't really get growth. But I guess the message from this podcast is, how do you project your opinion in a respectful, dignified way? And you've really clarified that for us today. Thank you for appearing again on our podcast, Casey.
My pleasure. And thank you for the invitation. It would be a delight to participate as a speaker. Thank you.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you everyone for listening. And until next time, as always, live consciously, my friends.